Welcome to Wild Quincy, a podcast that looks into the little-known and forgotten past of Quincy, Illinois.
If you think today's political landscape is, well, crazy, then do we have a story for you? Join us on a journey to the 1860s when a political rally consisted not only of speeches, but also fistfights and gunfire. Learn about the Stones Prairie Riot, that coming up next.
Now, here's your host, Chris Ketters and Travis Hoffman.
Back for episode 9. 9, Travis, of season 5 of Wild Quincy. Man, it, just like always, it goes by so quickly.
It does. It does. Blink and you'll miss it, right?
That's right. Well, you guys aren't missing it because you're catching out a really cool season. Of course, last episode we got to meet with and talk with the great and legendary Chuck Schultz and got a lot of good information. I always like it, Travis, when we talk to him because he's such a big fan in that he likes to kind of backtrack on episodes we've talked about in the past. And so it's always great to get his kind of take on some of the stuff we've talked about through the seasons.
Yeah, his knowledge base is just so deep and it's shocking. Sometimes just the random topics we'll bring up here or there, and he's got just a story like on the tip of his tongue. It's so cool, and so we really appreciate everything Chuck does to come on and also help kind of evangelize Wild Quincy. It's really a treat for us, so thank you again, Chuck.
Absolutely. And if you missed it, last episode, Chuck was on, but it was about another guy that we talk about pretty much every episode, and that is Harry Hyatt. So you can check out that, check out the information, because Harry, man, he is just a, would have been a very interesting guy to have dinner with, that's for sure.
Yeah. Super prim and proper, Episcopal priest. Then he's like hunting down all these wild hoodoo and folklore things, and it's just wild. It's crazy.
Yeah, so check that out. Also, you wild things out there, if you missed out on the last episode, we dug deeper into some of the Hyatt stuff, especially the one like Travis was mentioning, the hoodoo and all that stuff. We tried digging into all 5 volumes of that and had a heck of a time doing it. But you can check that out on the Patreon. We'll have a clip of that last episode coming your way in just a few minutes. Travis, we have such a packed episode that we need to jump right into the question of the day. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
You sound positive for a change.
Yeah. It's all, I'm numb to
maybe
it.
Maybe not.
I'm numb to defeat, Chris.
All right. Well, whatever. I don't even want to say anything. So here's the question. Capital punishment has been repealed in Illinois since 2011. But Illinois used to do death by hangings. The question is this. When did they stop doing death by hangings? When was the last guy to be executed that way?
Just in Illinois altogether?
Just in Illinois.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to throw some dates at you. All right. I think you can eliminate maybe a couple of these. All right. Is it 1878, 1898, 1928, or 1968?
Okay.
A lot of eights. Okay. So 78, 98, 28, 68. Feel like I look like you got it. So Illinois used to, have the death penalty. It's been repealed since 2011, but they used to do death by hangings back in the day. When did they stop doing that? We'll have the answer for that question coming up at the end of this episode, but we are heading to another time or place episode, the last one of the season. And this one, not a lot of people know about, but it's worth knowing, and it's going to be about the Stones Prairie Riots. We'll tell you about that coming up next here on Wild Quincy. Here's what you missed on the latest After Hours episode of Wild Quincy. Chuck sounded like he felt confident that the body is probably somewhere close to the tennis court, if we're talking about...
Young.
So all we need to do is pretend like we're playing tennis. I mean, it's pretty simple. And then mess around with some dowsy rods. So nobody would think any better if they thought we were just over there playing tennis.
Have you seen people playing tennis?
they go like this, right? They
put two hands up. Most people hold 2 tennis rackets. Each hand would walk around in a grid-like pattern with no ball in play.
Yeah.
Now, I think just for comedic factor alone, us out there holding dowsing rods simultaneously while holding tennis rackets in each hand. No tennis ball to be found. And any question, like, we're just practicing tennis. We're not really good at it.
this is like a wipe on, wipe off scenario. You've got to get to the steps of learning the steps.
Our After Hours episodes are available exclusively for Patreon members by going to patreon.com/wildquincy. For just a couple dollars a month, not only will you double the amount of Wild Quincy episodes at your fingertips, but you'll also be supporting our efforts as we continue to dive into the wild and crazy history of our favorite town. Also, as a Patreon member, you can take part in our live events and Patreon-only outings, as well as having access to our regular episodes 2 days before they are released to the public. It's easy. Just head to patreon.com/wildquincy. That's Patreon, patreon.com/wildquincy, and become a wild thing today. All right, Travis, we get to change roles for once this season. It feels like I haven't done very much of this, but I get to take the lead on this one for a change.
All yours, buddy.
Thumbs up from Travis. He's like,
don't
it
screw
off,
it up.
Yeah.
Let's not have another, let's not have another Pinkham. Or what was it? Pinkman? What was it?
Hopefully. Yeah. Don't ask me because I still don't remember. So hopefully we don't have that happen. But this one's an interesting one, I think, for both of us, because this one has a lot to do with something that's close to us. I mean, when you get down to it, only lived a few miles away from where this actually happened at. So it's kind of cool to dig into this. Yeah. So we're going to dig into the Stones Prairie riots. And Travis, kicking things off here, I'd be remiss not to kind of give you the overview of what this all looked like. And that was because this all happened in 1860, which, if you really think about what was important in 1860, all right, let's pop quiz this for you historians. And since you're the only one here, Travis, I'll have to hit you up on it. What would something that was very important happen in 1860?
Well, God, what was that? Civil War time, right? That was
right before it, actually. What about an election?
Okay. So Lincoln and Douglas thing was going crazy.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah. So obviously, not only was that going on, but there's just a lot of activity. And before we get into this, one of the things I kind of wanted to compare this to is, like, you know, people think, man, there's so much going on with politics in today's world. But when you really start to look at what 1860s United States looked like, I'm not sure today can hold up because there was a lot going on. An 1860 election may have been one of the most significant to U.S. history. And that's because you had a lot going on. Obviously, slavery was the number one discussion point, right? But there was other things going on as well. We'll talk about those things here in a second. But I want to focus on slavery to begin with, because at this time in 1860, things weren't really set. The South was still involved with the North. I mean, there was no separation. Okay. Yeah, exactly. We weren't there yet. But you could tell the intensity was getting there. So this election was going to have a lot to determine on what happened to the future of the country. And Quincy was no different in their activity as well. And one of the things I did want to point out, which this whole article or this story is coming from an article that the lovely person that we just had on a few episodes ago, and that would be Iris Nelson. Yeah, Iris Nelson, who she wrote this article with help from her friend and former history teacher in Quincy, Walter Wagner. They wrote this story together. Cool. So most of the information is coming from that. Some of it's coming from newspaper articles, but a good portion of it's coming from that. And one of the things that she pointed out was that you know, the Adams County anti-slavery movement was very strong, and it dated all the way back to like the 1830s, when there was a core of people that were really in favor of abolishing slavery. In fact, so much so that they created the first ever anti-slavery society that was founded in Quincy in 1838.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, you know, some of the names that you're going to hear on there, Orville Browning, people like that was involved with this group, obviously were big figures. One of the things I did find very intriguing about this was an 1842 meeting that they had in August of 1842. The group actually signed a resolution. I would think that that people in Missouri would be a little upset about this, but it was, they signed a resolution deploring the efforts to persuade blacks to leave their masters in Missouri, promising if they did so, they would be protected and safe in Quincy.
Wow. That's pretty bold. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So they actually said, hey, if you abandon what's going on, if you can make it here, we will protect you. Of course, Richard Eales is another name that was very popular in this. He was a big figure in this group as well. So a lot of big names in Quincy in the 1800s were involved with this effort. So obviously slavery is a big portion of the issues going on in the 1860s. The other two big ones that were going on, obviously we mentioned already, secession, possibility of South seceding from the North, and then states' rights. So obviously we already know slaves were, you know, the slave states were threatening to withdraw from the Union, and Southern states didn't really feel like the government had authority to tell them what they could and could not do. But there was a couple other things that were going on as well. You had what they call some issues in Kansas, where Kansas was getting ready to come into the Union. There was like a fight on whether they should be, you know, slave state or not. And then there was this thing called the Anti-Nebraska Movement. It also was known as the Kansas-Nebraska Movement, which was a super hot topic item back in 1860. Pretty much what it was it was a like a pro-South revision to what they call the Compromise of 1850. I'm not going to get into it. I started to deep dive, and then I was like, hold on. No.
Yeah, this is going to get way too off. A lot of rabbit holes when you start researching. I hear you.
So I filled that hole back in. I was like, no, I'm not going down that hole. Okay. But if you're interested, look up the Compromise of 1850. But in fact, something interesting about this, and something in my research that I came across I thought was very interesting, that this anti-Nebraska movement, or the Kansas-Nebraska movement, was in fact, a lot of historians believe that if it wasn't for that act being put into place, that Abraham Lincoln might not have actually re-entered into to politics after he left, because he was a state legislator. Yeah, he was a state legislator, and he left to focus on his law career, and then that movement came about, and that got his interest back into
it. Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kansas and Nebraska.
Yeah, really? Thanks for that movement. He was part of the Whig Party, too, and the Whig Party was also dying when Nebraska came into play. Nebraska's pretty much, a lot of historians believe, is the home of Republicans, and then when the Republican Party got really going, that also gave interest to Lincoln getting back into the fold.
They also love husking that corn.
Right. So obviously, again, I can't emphasize this enough. There is a lot of activity going on in the 1860s, which made it a very important election coming up. But not only is it an important election, but it's a very special election for our area and for Adams and Pike County, because we've never been in an experience like this before, and I'll explain here in a second. But four people running for office, we mentioned this last episode, you had, of course, Lincoln and Douglas, which you guys have heard of. Also, Kentuckian John Breckinridge was running as a South candidate for the South states. And then John Bell was from Tennessee. He was running as a Union candidate. So you had four candidates that were really, really running for this position. Lincoln and Douglas, though, they had amazingly huge ties to Adams and Pike County.
Yeah, that's just earth-shattering to think of. The whole world was focused on the men from this small little area.
Exactly. It's insane. So I had to deep dive a little bit into this, because I found it just so insane, like you said, about what the ties to the area are. So let's talk about Lincoln first. Adams County ties for Lincoln include his close friend and Quincyan Orville Hickman Browning, which we already mentioned. They had a lot in common, by the way, and I had a deep dive on this rabbit hole too today. They were both involved with the Whig Party, both born in Kentucky, both studied law. They were both state representatives at the same time in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And so obviously spending that much time together, oh, and they were in the military together too. Spending that much time together, they became friends and became very close friends.
Sure, yeah.
So obviously, Lincoln spent a lot of time with Hickman, Browning. We'll get into later. I ended up, Quincy Public Library, I love them to death. They have such an amazing archives. They have Hickman or Orville Browning's journals.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
In their possession. And so I was deep diving in that. We're going to talk about that on the Patreon side, because I found some super cool stuff in that. he visited Quincy, we're talking about Lincoln, visited Quincy a few times. His first ever time visiting Quincy was actually a speaking engagement to support a Whig candidate by the name of Archibald Williams, and that was in 1854. When I found out about this, there was also information about where the event was held, and it hit me. And I don't know if you ever have these moments, but I would hope as somebody that lives in the Quincy area, you would kind of get geeked out like I would about this, because it told about where the event was happening. This event, the speaking engagement, happened at the southwest corner of 6th and Main.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln was staying at a residence two blocks away on Main Street from the event. So if you were going to walk from 6th and Main, and I would assume towards the east, you most likely would be walking in the footsteps of Abraham Lincoln and Quincy.
That's pretty nuts. Yeah, Main Street right there.
Yeah, it's kind of cool just to think that, right?
Yeah, so that first speaking engagement happened basically where the new restaurant just opened up, Eight Open, I think, right there.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, so a little historical connotation context.
So maybe, is that on the corner of 6th and
Yeah,
Main?
Yeah.
So maybe that location is where Lincoln was doing his speech. I mean, he was, so even that, you know, it's kind of cool to think about.
You know, I wonder if Eight Open could get like something on the menu, like a special thing, like the Lincoln and related.
We'd have to have a special Abe name for
it. We're just idea guys. You know, you guys take it and run. Take it and run. We're just idea guys. Okay.
Just throw some
Go
ideas
on, Chris. Where are we at?
By the way, that was only 170 years ago that Lincoln was here because, you know, it was literally 170 years ago. Also, while we're on the subject about Lincoln ties, he was, of course, in town for the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates in 1858. He stayed at Browning's house during that event. He also visited Quincy again in August of 1859, but not really anybody knows what he was really doing in Quincy for that event. But he was visiting. He was in Hannibal before, I guess the day before or that earlier that day, and then he came to Quincy probably to visit with Browning, but who knows.
Yeah.
Lincoln also has ties to Pike County, Illinois, and that comes to Stone's Prayer, we'll talk about in a second. But he was able to practice law in Pike County, and he actually tried a few cases in Pittsfield. He also had two secretaries that went to Washington, D.C. when he did become president, and that was John Nicolai and John Hay, who were both from the Pike County area. So Lincoln has a ton of ties to this area.
Yeah.
But not to be held short.
Absolutely not.
So does Stephen
Douglas.
Are you
making fun of his height, Chris? Is that a height joke? Come on now. Let's not demean the man.
Yes, Stephen Douglas, not a tall, statured man by any means, but definitely the louder, the shorter they are, the louder they are. So, and I think he filled that void pretty good with his voice.
Oratorial skills, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but let's give you a couple Douglas ties. He was a lawyer and practiced law in both Pike and Adams County. There could be a possibility that these guys actually tried some cases against each other.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's a historical fact.
Yeah, I didn't come across that as a pure fact, but I would assume that was probably the case. Lived in Quincy in 1840s, where he presided over court cases, including, we already talked about, this, the Mormon affair. That was a big event for him back in the 1840s. Went on to become a U.S. House and a U.S. Senator for the state of Illinois, and then eventually moving to Chicago, but he would often come back to Quincy a lot. So, again, to have this craziness of having two major U.S. presidential candidates have such amazing ties to the Quincy and Adams County area. We've never seen that, may never ever see that again.
Yeah,
but this is what has happened in 1860.
Yeah, it's insane. Well,
yeah. And then on top of that, it's such an maybe one of the most crucial presidential elections in U.S. history, granted. So, yeah, kind of crazy. But, you know, it's 1860 and we're talking election time, rallies, we're talking, you know, get togethers and supporting your candidate and all that stuff. And when you do that, not, you know, we talk about today and stuff that happens today and how crazy it is. But in the 1860 election, as it drew closer, it was just as crazy back then, too. So much so, heckling and bullying during political rallies were actually pretty common.
Some things never change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes, though, those hecklers would lead to fist fighting and even physical altercations between not only people that were in the crowds, but actually against people that were on podiums speaking the subjects. So, like, you had Democrats, Republicans on stage at the same time that would get so aggravated with each other and so upset they would start fighting each other on stage.
Maybe we need more of that. Like, actual fisticuffs. You know, there's all this money and politics on both sides. And maybe we just need to throw down. Let's throw down on some issues, guys.
Yeah. It's WW politics.
Yeah.
But, no, you know, so the weird thing about this, and I don't think this probably really feeds into it, but if you think about it, back in the 1860s and earlier, they would actually invite somebody from the opposing party to attend rallies. So say it was a Republican rally, they would invite a Democrat to be offering a rebuttal.
Oh boy, you're talking about the most hated person in the room.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So what do you think is going to happen when they do that stuff?
Not a lot of hugs. Not a lot of hugs. Yeah.
So you might just think I'm full of crap here. But let's turn to September 18th of 1858. All right, this is a couple years before the 1860 election. But a guy by the name of Isaac Morris, who was a congressman, and Jackson Grimshaw, who is a close friend of Lincoln's, literally engaged in a fist fight at the podium of a rally being held in Nauvoo, Illinois.
Wow.
So what happened was, according to the Quincy Herald, they reported that Morris knocked Grimshaw down. He fell to the ground so hard that the platform that was supporting them collapsed.
Dude, this is WWE. He put him through the podium, man. Yeah, literally just put him through the podium.
So what happened
was... Were they in a cage by any chance? No? No? Just ask him. Okay, go on.
So what happened when Grimshaw fell... What happened when the stage fell, so did Morris. Morris fell on top of Grimshaw. So as they're laying on the ground, Morris is still punching Grimshaw on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So finally what happens is they
Stone
end up...
Stone Cold Stunner. I think that's what that's called. Yeah. Yeah.
So they end up breaking him up.
Stone Prairie Stunner. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go on.
This wasn't even that event. So they end up breaking him up, okay? But then we go to 6 days later, okay. All right? Guess who's at another event in Plymouth, Illinois? Mm. The same two guys.
Sure, sure.
So this time, though... Grimshaw, he comes a little bit more prepared. He actually has a Bowie knife in his pocket.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
Exactly. Wow. And when he attempts to draw it out, some people see that he's getting ready to do it. And so they quickly attack him and they intervene before he's able to do anything. But he literally was going to pull out a knife on this person.
That's
crazy.
Boy, it shows why attendance was so much bigger back then. I mean, you don't want to miss the Sunday night throwdown. Yeah, that's crazy.
Exactly. So that was leading up to all this that was going on. So let's get into the whole setup for what we came here for today. And that is what we'll refer to begin with as the Stones Prairie Rally.
You know, I was enjoying that setup so much. We could just keep on rolling. That was something. Let's set the bar high there. Okay.
Exactly. Just think, if I'm setting it there...
Okay, so there's...
Where are we going?
We're still on the ascent.
Yeah, okay. We haven't taken the conclusion path yet.
All right, buckle up, kids. All right.
Exactly. So let's dig into the details here. So it's all started with this invitation. Tensions rising. We're just months away from the November election. And Republicans decide they want to hold a mass union meeting and rally. By the way, political rallies at the time were often referred to as mass or monster meetings. So it really wasn't anything rather than just some sort of political event, okay?
Yes.
This was decided to have a mass meeting take place on Saturday, August 25th of 1860, which would also have a basket lunch as well for the day's events.
Sounds very quaint. I like that. In a beautiful meadow.
Yeah. So you have to imagine, by the way, that when you're talking about these masses or these monster meetings, it's almost like what you would imagine what the Casey barbecue is today, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's a gathering of a bunch of people, but instead, back in the 1860s, they gathered for these political events. It was kind of like a pretty big social event for the people in the community and in the region, really.
Keep in mind, there was no real, you know, form of media other than newspapers. I mean, there wasn't a lot else going on, so when this thing, you know, things like this happened, you wanted to be there.
Yeah. So the decision was to have this at a place called Stone's Prairie. And I got to give you the details about this because this is where it kind of hits close to home for me. Stone's Prairie was a little village. It's located just south of Plainville. It was established in 1856, actually had its own post office. By 1889, however, the town was overgrown by the city of Plainville or the village of Plainville, and Stone's Prairie was eventually lost, just becoming Plainville. The rally itself, however, though, what we call the Stone's Prairie Rally, was actually not in Plainville. It was just south of Plainville, about a mile or two south of Plainville, on a farm that was owned by a guy by the name of William Shinn. And the cool thing, if you guys are familiar with this area south of Plainville, you don't go very far before you hit the Adams-Pike County line. Yeah. And the other cool thing is there's an 1860-ish map, plat map, that was provided in this paper that I was looking at.
Nice.
And the road, like Highway 96, is still a road in 1800s or 1860s.
That's
wild. So that road was the road to get to William Shinn's farm. So William Shinn's farm, now if you go down Highway 96 towards the Pike County Adams County line, it's a bunch of open fields. You go past the cemetery and you kind of head towards that border. And William Shinn's farm, according to what I can tell, was right on the Adams-Pike County border, right there on Highway 96.
Okay.
The article mentions that it was about 2 miles north of the line, but looking at the actual plat map, it doesn't make sense that it would be. It looks like it is actually on the line. Mm. So that's what we're looking at. That's kind of the location of the Shinn's farm. And then the place that's specifically on Shinn's farm used to actually be a campground, so then that's why they decided to use it for that purpose. So that's the location. So it gives you a kind of a visual. Unfortunately, now it's just a field. There's really nothing there, but you have a good idea where it's at. The invitation. This is where it gets dirty. This is where it gets a little iffy, and the whole scenario kind of sets up not good to start with. So 2 weeks before the event, there was a notice that was put in the Quincy Whig and Republican. By the way, you had two newspapers at that time. You had your Republican newspaper and your Democratic newspaper. However, the Quincy Whig and Republican was quoted by saying this article cordially inviting Republicans, Democrats, Douglasites, and everybody from everywhere, was what they were quoted saying. In addition to the newspaper invitation, a large handbill had been distributed distinctly inviting Democrats to the event. So obviously everybody's invited. Okay. The handbill actually read, and this is a quote, "The Republicans of Payson and Kinderhook will have a grand mass meeting at basket picnic at the south end of Stone's Prairie on the farm of Mr. Shinn on Saturday, August 25th, commencing at 9 o'clock a.m. Special invitations extended to Democrats to participate in the event."
Okay.
Can't make it much more clear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody's invited.
Okay. Everybody's invited. Sounds like a lovely, lovely afternoon.
Yeah, so let's go to about 3 days before the event, and that's when Dr. Moses Bain of Payson comes into play. He was a predominant Democrat for Payson and the area, who was actually a doctor as well and practiced medicine in Payson. He was elected to the Illinois legislature in 1856 and 1858, so he was a current state representative at the time. He was first invited by William Shinn to host as kind of being the rebuttal to the Democrats for the Republican rally. But then a few days later, the committee that was putting the event together decided this isn't going to work. We don't want to use him. So they withdrawn their invitation to Moses.
Okay.
And by doing that, it shut down any Democrat from being on the stage. So it was a strictly Republican rally.
So you didn't have your guy given the rebuttal, essentially.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Moses Bain was known to be a Bain, knowing that this was a pro-Republican rally with no voice for the Democratic Party, tells Democrats on Thursday, so this is just 2 days before the event, stay home, don't attend. This is a Republican-only rally. Don't go.
Okay.
But it's 2 days before the event.
Yeah.
Nobody gets that message.
Yo. I mean, it's so funny because it's not that far. You think somebody on a horse could have just like right. delivered that note, you know? I don't
know. Yeah. So, pretty cool. I didn't realize, by the way, I know we have a decent amount of people that grew up and graduated from the Payson area. I did not realize Payson had their own state representative that lived in Payson. So that's kind of cool. Moses Bain was his name. So we get to Saturday of the event. That would be August 25th of 1860. This day didn't even start out good because the first signs of trouble came very early in this day. And that was telling us maybe it wasn't going to be such a great day, but it didn't happen at Stone's Prairie. The first events actually happened in Payson. There's a Republican group back in the day that was known as the Wide Awakes. It was a group that was put together that is kind of like a paramilitary group for Republicans. They started up in Chicago a while back before this 1860 election. But their goal was they led parades. If the Republicans were having a parade, they were the ones that were in front of the parade.
Okay.
But they were also in charge of keeping the peace.
Oh, that gets a little blurry, little gray there. Started good, ended not so great.
Okay. Yeah. So there was a group of Republicans in Quincy known as the Quincy Wide Awakes. They marched through Payson and on their way to the rally when they caught sight of the Democratic flagpole on the northwest corner of the square. This is probably where Village Hall is at now. That kind of caught their attention. And now you're going to say, what the hell is a flagpole, a politic flagpole? Right? Political yeah. flag hole.
Okay.
Flag pole. I keep saying hole. nobody knows the difference. So let me explain what that is. So what they used to do is they used to tell members of different parties that if there was a town, they would make these flag poles, literally flags, and they would put them on poles, and it would be in support of a candidate or something like that. It was normal for town folks to carry out ceremonies of raising the flags and doing all these things. And then most of them would decorate them with an effigy or a picture of a candidate. It might include some writing or something as well on it. There was also a lot of competition to try building the biggest one. There was a report in this article saying that Beverly, Illinois was boasting to have the largest flagpole standing at over 150 feet tall. Wow. So they had a big pole, say as you will. So there's obviously this is something that's pretty common back in this time frame of creating these flagpoles.
Okay.
This particular Democratic flag that was being held in Quincy, though, wasn't the nicest in the world. It showed an effigy of Lincoln on a rail with a maul in hand. Okay, that doesn't sound so bad, but when somebody describes it, it gets a little worse. He has a dilapidated hat, false face, this is a quote, hue of the moon in a fog, maul from the right arm pendant, pants too short for boots or vest, and a coat forgotten. Gotta love 1860s writing.
Yeah, they so many little personal insults peppered in with all that. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah,
like high. There, it's like a very high level of sophistication in what was said, but it's very like stab you in the back kind of sounding.
This is this is interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the Quincy Whig and Republican would later say that it was a miserable and stupid insult to the Republicans. This flag. Mm-hmm. All right. So Payson residents realizing what they had literally hanging in their town square, realized that this could be considered offensive to these guys coming through the town. So they were actually just thinking about cutting the thing down so they didn't offend anybody.
Okay. Okay.
But then they saw that the Wide Awakes had their own flag they were carrying.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So their flag had a caricature of Douglas drunk falling over a pair of rails. And according to the Payson, a certain Payson resident, the flag showed Douglas in, quote, head 2 feet in front of his equilibrium, hat 3 feet in front of his head, following line of gravitation, mouth issuing forth, I'm a goner, feet brought up against a pile of popular sovereignty in the shape of Lincoln rails.
Okay.
So
nobody was doing anybody any favors with the artwork on the flags.
So when the Payson Democrats see this, they're like, well, we're not cutting ours down.
Yeah.
We're going to defend our bad boy, instead.
Yes. This isn't going to end well.
So the Wide Awakes, they sit there for a while and they contemplate whether or not they want to do anything with the flagpole. But they, you know, they go, you know what? We got to get to the rally. We're just going to leave this here. We're just going to continue on our journey. But they have to get back to Quincy at some point in time. And so we'll see what happens later.
Okay.
So that's kind of left that way. So the Wide Awakes head towards Stone's Prairie, and the Payson residents are left there with their flag. All right, so we're heading to Stone's Prairie now. So we kind of got settled down in Payson for the time being. And when we get to Stone's Prairie, since people were coming from all around the area, there were various parades coming to the rally, which is kind of another cool thing that was happening back in this day. You know, today we have like these events where we have our parades and stuff like that. Well, back in the 1860s, I'm not sure that was necessarily as big as having parades to lead to political rallies. And these people would be dressed up, and they would dress up their carriages, and they would dress up their horses, and they would be walking by, you know, different means, by foot or riding horses, things like that. It's like an 1860s parade with a bunch of horses. I mean, really what it comes down to get to Stone's Prairie. So this is coming from all directions. Pike County, it's coming from the north, it's coming from Quincy. All these people are coming around.
Okay.
So we get to 9 a.m. We're finally getting to Stone's Prairie rally. The Pike County Journal estimated that by the start of the rally, that attendance was close to 10,000 people.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yes. Yeah. They're actually, the other Quincy newspapers considered that conservative and actually believe there is more than 10,000 people that were there.
Okay.
The Chicago Tribune was aware of this event as well, and they reported on their website, I don't think they had one of those in 1860. They reported on their newspaper.
No, it was actually, they had a very fancy spider from Charlotte's Web. They got a hold of her grandmother,
web.
And she would print the art in the web. So, you know, you were right the first time, actually, Chris.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was accurate. Oh, yeah,
you had to go to the site where it was located to see the web art. Website.
Physical.
Yeah.
But they were quoted, the Trib was quoted as saying that it was one of the most extraordinary gatherings of people that had ever taken place in this part of the state. So a big event. There were, in fact, enough people, in fact, that there was decidedly enough to have two separate stages going on. So two separate speakers were able to speak simultaneously. So those that were in attendance could actually choose which one they wanted to listen to.
This is like a concert set, like a Lollapalooza situation. This is like the original Woodstock. They're out in a field somewhere. Yeah, multiple stages. I don't know. Maybe there was just one stage. Go on, Chris. Yeah, save me from my banter.
No, you got it. There was numerous speakers that were involved. Speakers that day included Archibald Williams, who we talked about earlier, who Lincoln came to speak for on behalf of back in the 1850s. Henry Osbury, Reuben Rutherford, Daniel Gilmer, Abraham Jonas, which we've talked about before, and a guy by the name of Jackson Grimshaw. Does that ring a bell to you by any chance?
Slightly. But I can't place why.
He was the guy that was wielding a knife.
Oh, the
just
Bowie
a few years
knife
before.
Guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That
Bowie,
guy.
Bowie. It's Bowie knife, right?
Bowie. Yeah. Bowie okay. knife.
Not David Bowie. Finally, that'd be strange. Okay. Go on.
That would be kind of. That'd be kind of a cool picture. And then, of course, Orville Hickman Browning was there as well one of the speakers. The only speaker not from Quincy, by the way, was Daniel Gilmer. Everybody else was from Quincy. Gilmer was from the Pittsfield area. So we kick things off. The rally begins with a musical performance by the Quincy Band, and the Barry Glee Club was singing. Also, the Lady Glee Club from Perry also performed. The first speaker was Abraham Jonas. And we've talked about him a little bit in the past, but Jonas was the first Jewish settler for Quincy, but maybe more known as being one of the biggest Lincoln supporters in Quincy. He was also in Chicago, was a wigwam, and was a supporter when that was all going on up in that time frame. So a lot of information. I'm going to assume we're probably going to have an episode about him at some point.
Yeah, Abraham Jonas holds the record and I've said this before, best facial hair.
Quincy
history. Look him up. Tell me I'm wrong.
He's got the stash going. Oh, yeah, I remember.
It's something's going on there, Chris. Anyways.
Well, Abraham, Abraham, he spoke for about an hour. And when he finished, the rest of the day's agenda was announced, and then everybody retired to the wagons for lunch. So we go to lunch. When we get there, the grumblings start to happen of like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why has all this been Republicans and no Democrats have been on the stage? Like, they were starting to think that something was going on and that they weren't. So many Democrats who were not aware that they were not actually really invited started believing that they would hear a pro-Democratic message, and that just never happens, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So after lunch, Orville Hickman Browning comes on, and he's going to be the next person on stage. So he starts to speak, and Orville is talking about different subjects. But as that's happening, Douglas supporters begin to gather behind the speaker stand, making a plan to disrupt the proceedings and believing that it was the Democrats' turn to speak. So soon after that, as they're trying to get all this planning done behind the stage, also Democrats start to cheer and do chants of Douglas's name in the crowd as Orville is speaking. So Browning soon realizes that these supporters are not going to let him speak. And so the previously mentioned wide awakes were asked nicely to have the hecklers cleared out from behind the speaker stand.
Yeah, this is going to go real good.
Yeah. So this is where we split, because I mentioned earlier we have a Democrat newspaper and a Republican newspaper. So depending on which newspaper you picked up in, on the Sunday edition, made a determination on what happened next. So let's start with the Democrats.
Certain networks' headlines are never altered. I know nothing of this. This is so strange to me. What a foreign concept.
No, this is
concept.
Totally new, right?
Wow. It's sad, and it's kind of interesting to have that perspective of what we see and think, oh God, it's gotten so bad. This is nothing new.
No, it's not. You think it's so bad. And then that's what I was going to mention it later, is that you think that today is really bad, but holy cow, it's kind of always been that way.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go on.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you caught that. That's exactly was my mind thought when I was doing all this research. Anyway, let's talk about the Democratic version first. According to the Quincy Herald Whig, the Democratic paper, riot resulted when one of the wide awakes told the Democrat from Kinderhook to stop hurrahing for Douglas. When they did not stop, one of the wide awakes launched a missile, which was probably a rock, at the man and hit him in the face. The man then struck the wide awake member and knocked him, quote, dinner above breakfast and heels considerably above both.
Breakfast. I mean, I've never heard that. That's wild. Okay.
I like that. I had to keep that one. So a fight broke out involving several hundred men after that, and the fight approximately lasted 20 minutes, according to the Democrats' newspaper version. Republican version goes a little bit differently. It says the Quincy Whig and Republican claimed that the troublemakers were removed from behind the speaker stand, but in the process, one of the Democratic supporters attacked a wide awake member. One observer reported that one of the Democrats had a pistol and drew it quickly, but was, quote, met his deserts promptly at the hand and fist of a crippled German.
Okay. Did he get him with his cane or something? Yeah. Or?
I don't know, but he evidently wasn't able to pull out that pistol very easily.
And he certainly doesn't have a name. I think everybody knows the old crippled German.
Yeah.
We don't need to waste ink on his name. Yeah,
exactly. We don't need to worry about that. So who knows which story is true and how this started, but one thing is for certain, that I think that it was right that there's somebody still standing on stage, and he is still willing to just keep going. And that is Orville Browning.
Pay no attention to the ruckus. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. It's normal. This is a normal Saturday in Adams County. But Orville Browning was back on stage. He was on stage while all this was going on. Once things settled down, he continued speech for another hour. This is where I started to research. I was like, after I got done reading this article, I was like, Browning's journal has to be in this building somewhere. So I searched, finally found it, and was able to pull up his journal. And in this day, he actually has some notes or some journal entries from this day. His journal reflects that says, Douglas Democrats who were drunk and disorderly tried to break up the meeting. Several fights occurred, but did not materially interrupt speaking.
Okay.
So he just kept on going.
Yeah.
He did give credit to the wide awakes for protecting the speaker during the event. This is where, you know, we talked about whose version do you believe. When you have a guy that's building a journal, writing a journal that he doesn't know that if it's ever going to see the light of day, I think that you may want to lean towards that being maybe more accurate than any other
version. Yeah, yeah. Where's his agenda there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't, he never expects this is going to sit in a library in 170 years later.
Right.
So the rest of the events at Stones Prairie pretty much go non-eventful. Again, some bruising, some maybe some broken bones, but nothing too serious.
Well, gee, that doesn't seem like it would be a memorable event, Chris. Was that all the excitement that day?
That was at Stones Prairie.
Okay.
But you remember we talked earlier that the Wide Awakes had to get back to Quincy somehow, and evidently the only road to Quincy is through Payson.
Oof.
All right. So let's talk about this. When the Wide Awakes return to Payson, they see the Payson Democrats still protecting that flagpole in the city square. Not totally sure why. Maybe because of the craziness of what had just happened at Stones Prairie. Maybe because they didn't want to get involved in another skirmish. But the Wide Awakes actually take the high road and decide to leave it alone. And they're just going to continue on their journey and head back to Quincy. They're done. They're not going to mess with them.
Right, right.
They're just going to head out of town. So they start to head out of town, but evidently someone else had a different idea. Because the Wide Awakes, as they were leaving town, they were passing a cornfield, and shots rang out.
Shots, you say?
Shots.
Wow.
Gunshots rang out.
Okay.
And they hit the flagpole of theirs and put more than one bullet, according to the Quincy Whig and Republican, into the flag itself. Shots continue to go flying, and a couple of the Wide Awakes are actually hit with bullets.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's getting real.
One man actually hit in the arm twice and was able to get medical attention in Quincy once he got back into town. Again, luckily, nobody was killed, but this became just an insane event because they were taking the high road and be like, we're out of here, dude. And then that's what ends up happening.
Yeah.
Shots get fired. Oof. That is what happened on Saturday. We are finally done. That is the events of Stones Prairie Riot. Sunday, however, this is when, and I love this part, and I got to give Iris, I feel like this is something that Iris put, and I liked how it went so good that I wanted to keep it in here. According to an article the next day in the Quincy Herald Whig, approximately 30 men in Payson were nursing, quote, broken heads and bruised faces following the events from the day before. And this quote was so good. I'm glad that it's actually the title of the article they wrote. It says, the great quote from the paper said that each man had his own accounts of the events that happened, but each of them was, quote, sick, sore, and sorry.
That's pretty good alliteration. Right there. Well done.
Yeah. So they felt stupid about what happened.
Right.
They obviously were banged up, but you know, they were like, this isn't who we are. I don't know why this happened. So obviously a lot of apologies. This was in the art newspaper for weeks following it. There's a ton of news stories, a ton of letters to the editor, a ton of apologies being given by various members of the community.
Wow, okay.
I will give them credit. You know, it does seem like the intensity was pretty strong at the event, and it definitely went from a rally to a riot pretty quickly. But there was very quick to be apologetic about what happened and realizing it was probably stupid to fight over what they were fighting over.
yeah, wasn't great in the rear view.
Yeah. So a couple afterthoughts here, and I got a couple things before we wrap up. But it was believed that some of the violent action was because the area, and this was coming from the article that I was writing, that some of this activity was because, you know, Quincy and Adams County is on the edge of pretty much the new frontier, right? I mean, Missouri still, but we were still pretty westernized, I guess is a good word, and kind of still kind of rough and tumbled and hardened people. And so, you know, a lot of people believe that it was because of that some of these altercations resulted in the violence and probably could have been prevented in general. But there's also a factor that wasn't brought up, and I didn't mention it, but many people believe that alcohol was a major factor in the events as well.
Because
there was a lot of drinking on both parties that day.
I mean, big.
A full day of drinking never is going to end well.
Boy, it's just like a kegger gone wrong, kind of. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's like you have the two people that hate each other the most in high school, and they go to a kegger together. What do you think is going to happen with those two people?
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. You guys already know this. I don't have to tell you who won the presidential election that year. That one's pretty obvious. However, there was no surprise that Douglas won most votes in both Adams and Pike counties, although Lincoln won the state overall. Douglas also, by the way, carried Brown, Calhoun, and McDonald counties in the election. Douglas, who was still a U.S. Senator, returned back to that position until his death in June of 1861. Ironically, the guy who was speaking at Stone's Prairie rally that day when the riot broke out, which was Orville Hickman Browning, was appointed to fill Douglas's position when he passed away.
Gotcha.
So kind of full circle there.
Yeah, really.
In that event. As for the men, I found this very interesting. This came from another news article. I found this was pretty intriguing. The men of Stone's Prairie that lived in that area, it says here, many of the men of Stone's Prairie served in the Union Army under General Sherman in the Western Theater battles, eventually supporting troops under Ulysses S. Grant in the capture of Vicksburg Fortress on July 4th of 1863. After the Battle of Chattanooga, they marched with Sherman through Georgia to capture Atlanta in September of 1864. Stone's Prairie soldier by the name of James Buck was killed on October 5th in Altoona, Georgia, before Sherman's troops reached the Atlantic Ocean on December 21st. So there was a few of the Stone's Prairie soldiers, and unfortunately one of them did not survive the journey. But so it's kind of a, again, you talk about events that happen. If you think about how that all circles around, is that, you know, these guys are supporting a cause and supporting a rally, and who knows who they're in support of, if it's Lincoln or Douglas, but now they're in the Union Army. And unfortunately, a couple of years down the road, one of those guys that was at the event did pass away because he was, you know, serving his country.
So. Yeah. Oof. That's wild.
Yeah. So that's it. Information, as I mentioned, came from Iris Nelson and Walter Wagner. The story that they called, of course, as I mentioned, the title is Sick, Sore, and Sorry, the Stone's Prairie Riot of 1860. You can find it by the Journal of Illinois History. It was actually published in spring of 2002. And Iris, man, if she listens to this, I got to give her credit. This well-done article. And I have to give her credit, too, and Walter as well. This story probably would be lost to time if she would. Wouldn't have done the research that she did. So kudos to both her and Walter on that.
And kudos to you as well, Chris, for taking the time and researching and getting all that pulled together from all the different areas. It was, I knew very little about this topic, and I think a lot of people will probably be able to still, you know, say the same thing. And boy, I'm going to have my, I'm going to be on full alert going through that neck of the woods next time and see if I can kind of see where that was, because it's always interesting to see the context of history in a location that would otherwise just be obscure. So
right.
Interesting. Thank you.
On the Patreon side of things, where we got some more to cover there, we kind of mentioned it already, the comparisons, and I kind of want to dig into this a little bit, but I think it'd be better to do it behind a paywall. And that has to do with comparing today to what 1860s looked like when it comes to the political landscape.
Oh,
so I think that's kind of an interesting comparison to look at how that is. And then I mentioned already this before, but there was some very interesting stuff. I know we're going to do an Orville Hickman Browning episode eventually, but boy, his journal is so interesting. And I actually dug into, I'm like, wait a minute, he was in Washington, D.C. when Lincoln died. And so I went straight to 1865 and looked that up. And so there's some really interesting stuff there. And then I also found another pretty cool book in the Illinois room at the library, and I saved a couple articles, so we'll hit those up on the Patreon side.
Very cool. Look forward to it.
All right. Well, that is a look at the event that shaped Quincy and Adams County in the 1860 political climate, and that was the Stone's Prairie Riot. We'll be back with more after this on Wild Quincy.
Friends, you'll be happy too when you see how quickly ENDS chlorophyll tablets stop triple O. Yes, ENDS, ENNDS, stop odors of body, odors of breath, odor of pence. Stop all three, all at the same time. Keep you fresh as a daisy all day, all over. It's amazing, but one or two tiny ENDS tablets daily are all you need to stop triple O.
So it's kind of go back to another retro ad, and Travis, you asked me this question when I sent it to you. You're like, are they saying ins like the letter in?
Yeah. It was kind of hard to process.
Yeah. It's ins, E-N-N-D-S, odor is what they're talking about. And the reason why I posted this was because where I'm getting this stuff is actually called oldtime.com, where it's old radio commercials. And this guy at the end, is what they're using is chlorophyll. Like, I think chlorophyll, like the stuff that somebody puts over your mouth to
chloroform.
That's chloroform. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Chlorophyll, if you didn't listen in, you know, Mr. Carey's science class back in the day, is the stuff that's in plants, right? It's like, it's that chlorophyll is what
they're
talking
about. It's like plant blood or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because we're scientists and we know what it's called.
Yeah, it's greener, maybe.
So that's what it is. I did find, and let me pull this up, is that I had to do a quick search. I'm like, well, they're saying it's chlorophyll. And in all honesty, chlorophyll does not do you any good. According to many sources, WebMD being one, it says some people use chlorophyll for body odor, urine odor, reducing the smell of bowel movements, or bad breath. But there is no scientific evidence to support that it actually works.
That's wild.
Huh. This is one of those companies that had something that they thought worked, but in all honesty, it didn't. But as I mentioned, the website that I use is oldtime.com, and I loved it. And Travis, I told you this. I was like, read the last sentence. And it said, since I was born in 1954, this is coming from the guy who wrote the website, I don't honestly know firsthand if chlorophyll really works in controlled odor, as the radio commercials and printed ads claimed. But I found an interesting comment in advertising book stating that cows eat grass every day. While the green grass has chlorophyll in it, the cow still smells like cow. I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so there you go. An old classic 1950s. It was about mid-50s when that this chlorophyll ends odor. I don't know if it was even a tablet or if it was how it worked. But yeah, so there you go. Chlorophyll tablets. Not necessarily anything worthwhile.
If you're running late to work, you don't have time for a shower, just grab the house plan on your way out and just do a couple swipes under your arm, and you'll be fine.
Swipe it under each arm.
Grab some tree limbs on the way out the door. Yeah.
Those leaves that are on the ground, as long as they're green.
Just start rubbing. It's fine.
Rub it all over, yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, that's what you use when you're out in the woods and you don't have any toilet paper, right?
Sounds like roses, because it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. Okay.
Should we bring up the golden pipes?
Let's do it.
And now, it's time for Words of Wisdom from Adams County.
All right, Travis, time for the folklore, the wisdom, the know-how, and thanks, Bo, by the way, from our forefathers and foremothers. And this week, I decided that since we had a riot on our hands, maybe we need to go find out some steps on how to prevent riots and quarrels and fights.
Good. Useful information always.
Yes, as always. So we'll turn to Mr. Hyatt for these information items. 7721 and 22 are like this. If you're going to have a quarrel, you're going to have a quarrel if you spill salt. So don't spill salt, obviously. The next one is to avert a quarrel, which, by the way, salt is like 50 of these things.
it's always salt.
Yeah. To avoid a quarrel, when you spill salt, throw something over your left shoulder, which you've heard before in the past. A couple down the street here, 7736. Always smile while passing salt at the table, or you will soon be on bad terms with the person to whom the salt is passed.
Oh my, interesting.
So make a smile. I thought that was interesting. 3535 is this one. If you dress the left foot first, you will quarrel that day. Man, there was a lot of left foot dressers the day of the Stone Prairie Frights.
Somebody wasn't smiling with the salt distribution.
That's right. And then finally here, the one that I got a kick out of, and we can comment after, but 3465, if someone steps on the toenail clippings, which you have thrown on the floor, you and that person will soon disagree.
Words of wisdom from Adams County.
That's a gross image.
Yeah. Well, you're disagreeing because they just stepped on your toenail clippings.
I mean, some of those can be sharp.
Yeah. And right? It's like, dude, pick up your toenail clippings.
You ever have, one time I remember my son, and he'll love them sharing this. He has gnarly toenails sometimes, and they get real long. And I remember the time his sister wasn't. They were just hanging out, and he cut her leg with his toenail.
Oh yeah,
and it's like, holy crap, man! What do you got down there, Wolverine?
Yeah, I get blamed for that every once in a while too. I have really, really strong toenails too. So yeah, I can see it be like pulsing, like, you know, if you stepped on something like that, that'd really, really hurt. Yikes. So yeah. All right. So we got things just about wrapped up, but we do have one last piece of the puzzle, and that is the question of the day. Kind of, I don't usually like doing dates, but I thought this one's appropriate.
Okay.
You ready? Want me to recap?
Yeah, let's recap.
Capital punishment in Illinois. It's been gone since 2011, but Illinois used to use death by hanging. And the question is this: what year did that end? And we give you some options: 1878, 1898, or could it be possibly 1928 or 1968? Travis, I know I don't like using dates, but you got any thoughts to throw out there?
I'm going to go with B.
B?
Yeah.
Wow, you're just throwing out there. 1898, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a tough one. It's hard. It's incorrect. Mm. So the answer is actually 1928.
Really? Boy, yeah, I was thinking that would have been a little too late.
But, yeah, right? Last person executed in the state of Illinois was Charles Berger, and this was, again, in 1928. And I'm trying to remember what city it was in. See if I can find it real quick. Here we go. It was Benton, Illinois. He was the last one to be hanged. It looks like for maybe bootlegging and being in a gang.
That would check out. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be about the time frame. So, so there you go. There's a story of the day. Of course, not sure. Have you ever come across any hangings in the Quincy area?
I believe there have been some. Yeah. I'm sure people can probably pepper in the comments. We hope you do. But, I want to say that there's even one story about...
Don't tell me somebody survived.
No, I don't think so. But they were describing like a hanging tree in some area of Quincy.
Probably at the old county courthouse, would be my guess.
Well, I think that was like the official one. I think this was more
the unofficial. Unofficial?
Yeah,
oh, geez.
Yeah.
Probably was over at Stones Prairie. So there you go. Of course, we're not talking about hangings in the next episode, even though that sounds like we may need to deep dive into that. We're talking about another crime. Is this right, Travis? I know nothing about this.
You know, I didn't know very much about this either until recently, and it's a horrific crime that happened here in the history of Quincy. Relatively recent, we're talking kind of, I think, 60s, 70s, flower power, hippie era. These were two characters that kind of star-crossed lovers, but she was already married, so that was kind of a problem. It gets real gory, and this is one of the unsolved crimes that I think is probably on the lesser known side of Quincy. So we're going to talk about that with Rodney Hart, who has done a lot of research in that. He's going to join us next episode. We're looking forward to it.
And speaking of Rodney, I think you guys have something coming up, right?
That's right. Yeah. Way to pitch it. Yeah. Rodney and I, we occasionally get together and play some music. We'll be doing that again this Saturday as you're hearing it. So Saturday the 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Quincy Brewing Company. If you don't have plans, please plan to attend. I always love seeing people that listen to us on Wild Quincy. Come say hello. And hopefully if the weather's nice, we'll be back in the patio there. It's always a good time. So hope we can see you there.
Yeah, and we're recording this before the eclipse, so hopefully the zombies have not come out and you are still enjoying this. So
keep those glasses on, guys. It's serious stuff. Yeah.
So yeah, be enjoying that. Of course, we'll have our Patreon After Hours episode coming up your way next week, and then that episode as we get ready to wrap up season 5 and enjoy having one of our regulars, Rodney Hart, being coming back for that episode. We'll be looking forward to that. Travis, before we wrap things up, are we missing anything?
No, Chris, again, thanks for the putting everything together for the episode. It was nice to be on the receiving end for once.
Right? Well, for Travis Hoffman, I'm Chris Ketters. You've been listening to Wild Quincy. We'll catch you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.
Wild Quincy is released every other Tuesday and is produced by Chris Ketters and Travis Hoffman. Sound designed by Downdraft Sound and Editing. And music by Travis Hoffman Music. I'm Bo Beecraft, and thanks for listening to Wild Quincy.